Hello and welcome to this latest installment of NIMSY's live event series. I am your host, Tucker Johnson, and today we are discussing the latest research from NIMSY Insights, the Language Industry Curve. This report provides a comprehensive look at the transformative decade ahead for localization, translation, and language services. We'll be talking about the key trends shaping the industry, including the rise of AI, demographic shifts in the translator workforce, and evolving role of technology. Our guests are the brilliant minds behind the report, Renato Beninato and Laszlo Varga, who will share their insights on how companies can adapt to this fast-changing landscape and remain competitive. As always, the full research report is available at NIMSY.com. So go over to NIMSY.com. It's right there on the homepage. And you, NIMSY partners have access to the full report. If you're not a NIMSY partner, why aren't you? Get some budget. Talk to your boss. Become a NIMSY partner. We're toying with the idea of making it more available later to non-NIMSY partners. But you can go preview the report even if you're not a NIMSY partner. So go check that out. Also, NIMSY partners will be able to download a beautiful PDF version, which is much more readable and very well formatted. Thank you to the team here at NIMSY Insights that worked so hard on putting this together. Renato, Laszlo, I'm not going to do any plugs or anything today. I'll just jump right into it. Welcome. I think everybody pretty much knows who you are, but let's give a quick introduction. Renato, who are you? Why should we listen to you? Welcome, Laszlo. Laszlo's on mute. There we go. So you are our technology expert here. It's excellent. Okay.
Not just for the buyers specifically, but also for our language service provider partners, as well as language technology providers. And ultimately, Tucker, as you just said, we actually believe in the democratization of information. Currently, the article in depth is gated, but almost on a click of a button, it can be made ungated. And maybe we'll do just that. We'll see.
Yeah.
But the plan is to have it available for the widest possible audience. I think the insights that we created with Renato are impactful for any actor in the industry.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome, Laszlo. And to those of you in chat, this is why it's great to have chat live. Thank you for letting us know the audio issues. You didn't miss much. Renato was just introducing himself. He's my business partner. We co-founded NIMSY together. But let's dive right into it here. So the language industry curve, and I must admit that for this report, I was pleasantly surprised. I was on vacation for a little bit. I come back and we have a new report out there, and I didn't know much about it. I had to read it before jumping on this podcast with you guys. But my first question, I think, that I want to talk about here is why the language industry curve? Who's this report for? What does it talk about? Why did we feel the need to come out with this as we move into Q4 of 2024?
So as Laszlo indicated, we have been asked questions by all the players in the industry, but especially from large enterprise buyers trying to understand what is the dynamic of, and I'm talking specifically about localization departments that are wanted to know what was their situation moving forward. Everybody believes that we are in an existential moment where the whole industry is under threat. And I had this conversation with Laszlo, and we felt that the general messaging has been quite negative and apocalyptic almost. It's like it's the end of an era. It's doom and gloom. Numbers are down and so on. And when we have conversations with people in all aspects of the business, the technology companies, the LSPs, large and small, single language vendors, multi-language vendors, and the buyers, big and small, of translation and localization services, we sensed that a lot of this hyperbole that was happening in the industry was an echo chamber. It was people repeating negative messages from other people, but the facts were not there in terms of disruption. There is a lot of intrusion, there is a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty. There are many feelings and trends that we see in this space. But if we bring them all together, we're not in a doom and gloom scenario. So I started plotting
at the same
on a piece
time,
of paper.
We're not in the sunshine and rainbows era.
Absolutely.
I don't want to I don't want to be toxically positive here, but I think our goal is to be realistic.
No, absolutely.
And that's kind of always awesome. The approach that we've taken here at NIMSY is like we really try not to jump on that hype train and sit back and figure out what is real, what's not, what are actual industry players saying about this, and that's where this report came from.
So one part, and the other part is that we have observed some patterns, right? Just recently, very recently, it's in everybody's memory, the beginning of the pandemic, we went through a very similar period of doom and gloom, uncertainty. Nobody knew what was going to happen. It was the first time in the technologically advanced era that we were going through the kind of experience that we had of shutdowns and work from home and what is going to happen to the business world. And just after that uncertainty that happened in the beginning of the pandemic, we witnessed one of the fastest growths in the language industry, and with multiple players posting record growth, record revenue, record profit. So this is this pattern, and this is what I think generated the report in the beginning, was understanding that there is a certain pattern. I wrote last week an article on LinkedIn where I talked, I quoted Mark Twain that history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. So it was a quote that I didn't think about when we were writing this report, but
would have been it, yeah.
Exactly. It's we're in the same theme, right? But what's your impression, Laszlo?
I think rhyming back to what Tucker just said, yeah, in 2023 there was a bit of a pause in the growth of the industry, but we have no doubt that it has been growing. Yeah, you can factor in inflation and all that, but is the least interesting part of the economic equation. There's a lot of external influences, including economic downturn in certain verticals and industries, including unemployment rates climbing up or down, or would it be the stock market, how is plummeting or gaining high? I think the S&P is up like 15% right now compared to the beginning of the year. There's a lot of growth everywhere in the world, and that's essentially despite of war, disruptions in supply chain, and further threats to the global economy or segments of it. But we observe is essentially when we talk with language service providers, they are more optimistic than they were at the beginning of the year. And that's undoubtedly surprising if you're taking the pessimistic view of the industry. Technology is coming to take our bread again. And as Renato said, patterns are patterns. And when we created our predictive article, we said the patterns are there, and maybe it's not going to be exponential growth in the future, but we'll get to the curve. It's called a curve because there is a curve. We see at least linear growth industry going forward. And the underlying mechanisms that are driving it are fairly clear to us. And we thought that when we were trying to explain this, especially as Renato said, to enterprise buyers, there were some key components to those discussions which were relevant to everybody. And so the article is speaking to all the actors in the industry. It's a good read, and we're more than happy to be receiving questions or even challenges to say, hey, why are you saying this? It doesn't fit my specific story. Or no. What I see with technology is completely the reverse of what the report says. Let's just very quickly talk about, I guess, future predictions, which is one of my favorite quotes ever, which did make it into the report, was from Niels Bohr, which is, prediction is difficult, especially about the future. It's true, and we think that the future is kind of linear. Time is moving forward, and we're moving 1 second per second forward. Sorry, I study physics, so I have all this physics talk as well sometimes. But it's very non-deterministic. There are a lot of external factors that influence not only individual companies, buyers, language service providers, but entire verticals, industries, or even countries and economies. And certainly when we talk about the change of dynamic in the industry, then we very often think of a single number, right? But what we really see is different segments of the industry are growing at different paces. And that's primarily because also on the demand side, on the buy side, the future is not distributed evenly. I'm not sure whose quote that was anymore. But the future is certainly here. And what we see is a forward-looking positive trend. Even though not all the boats may be lifted with the tide, but we have very little doubt that it's a positive growth that we're going to be facing.
Let's get into it here, because I want to talk about some of the key findings. Well, first I want to take a look at what is the language services industry curve. So if you're following along at home and you want to pull it up, if you're a NIMSY partner, you can pull it up, NIMSY.com. It's right there on our homepage. Go check it out. Just a quick review of what's in the report available on NIMSY.com. There's lots of graphs. Then we're going to look at a couple maybe of those today. We talk about the organization, execution, and maturity of the industry. We're giving predictions and insights on what is going to be the role of human translators in 2035. 10 years from now. We're taking a look at the projection for the next 10 years and some key insights. So starting off with those key insights, let's go to key finding number one from the report here, which is general service areas of translation and interpreting, including localization, multimedia, AI-driven services, traditional text translation, and emerging trends present both challenges and opportunities for language services providers to deliver global solutions. Gentlemen, expand on this for me.
Well, the clear message is the challenges and opportunities are there for every actor. And one of the things that we hear from LSPs is, should we really die, for example, all this AI thing? Should we label ourselves as an AI company? And there's risk with it, and there's benefit with it too. The benefit, of course, is if you signal innovation with AI, that looks very good on the market. But if you start saying that your technology solution, your own proprietary or third party, is actually delivering really good quality on a wide array of services, then suddenly you're putting yourself at risk saying, well, if you do AI, then why do you do services in the first place, which is the bread and butter for every language service provider company. And very quickly noting, I think, and we believe generally at NIMSY, that the most successful language service providers are those that can segment very well their markets, both for verticals and both for services, those that are technologically enabled and those that are less so. And there needs to be a very careful segmentation and targeting for those segments and pieces of demand that require a higher level of automation, higher level of technology deployment and development as well. and those that still require a very heavy touch of humans. I think there's also a myth in the industry that if technology is taking over, then margins are suffering. This is not what we see. Revenues per project may be going down because per word prices, for example, may be changing because of efficiencies and productivity gains that may actually be realized from those technologies. No matter how big the promises are, they are very often more limited than they seem at first. At the same time, margins seem to be fairly stable. Essentially, everybody that we speak to, they say, yeah, maybe my revenues are not as good as they were last year or 2 years ago, or especially not after the massive growth after the pandemic, but my margins are very, very good. So what we do observe is the livelihood of translation companies is ongoing. The volume of work, because the per project prices are changing, the volume of work may actually go up or down. Our big bet is, of course, that because the per project costs may be going down, there's just more projects that will jump the human evaluation, the end of pipeline, machine translation, post-editing, or QA services, LQA, proofreading, whatever it may be. Those services may be applied to more content than they are applied to now. And of course, technology itself is opening new opportunities in any of those verticals. So there are both challenges and opportunities. And one thing that I'm not sure if we emphasized enough in the report is the risk of cannibalization of revenues. LSPs and have, especially the very large ones, they have the risk of deploying AI and further automation will just eat into existing revenue streams. Whereas new players, they have the opportunity of avoiding all this cannibalization altogether and go after new clients. But very often, and Renato, you know this all too well, lower cost usually comes with the association of lower quality or at least a higher level of risk of being able to deliver to standards. And that may be so. At the same time, there is a level of cost drop for which any localization buyer, budget holder, decision maker will say, I'm interested. If you can give me 50% cheaper, I want to hear what you say.
Yeah.
But so hearing what somebody says is not necessarily something that will be delivered immediately. What we see is it may take years before really deep operationalized enterprise-grade solutions will be rolled out to the market that will be further cost savings than they are currently.
So I would make just two brief comments on what you said there. First of all, the language industry is a transformation industry. We don't create anything. We're working on content and material that other people create, right? So the conversation is not so much how AI affects the language industries, how AI affects the industries that our clients are in, positively or negatively, because we are a downstream activity. We depend on decisions and content that is created by the client side. So that's one aspect. So we need to adapt to how AI is impacting the industries that we're working with. Of course, some industries like healthcare and medical and pharmaceutical are less proactive they're more resistant to change because of regulatory environments and so on. Other industries like IT, tech are more willing to address this challenge and embrace the technology. So I think that the big message is that when we talk about the language industry, and when NIMSI talks about the language industry, we look at the industry as a whole, not to specific small niches and parts of the industry. As a whole, the trend is a trend of growth. And we're going to see parts of the industry where this is happening. One of the frequent conversations that I have, especially with single language vendors that work with large LSPs, these are the ones that are suffering the most. Why? Because the large LSPs are engaged in using AI and trying to implement it in their processes to protect their margins, as you were talking about. And who suffers with that? The downstream activities. So, but, and this also causes a cascading effect in the perception, the negative perception of what is happening in the industry. So if a large player, pick RWS, Lionbridge, whoever you want, loses a contract. This is actually a real story that I learned about last week. It's like there is a shift. For example, a large enterprise company decides to stop using a vendor and goes to another vendor. So the current vendor loses $1 million worth of, and making up numbers just to make it easy, loses $1 million worth of work. And this MLV works with, let's make it easy, 20 single language vendors, and they, or 10, let's make it 10. So $1 million, $500,000 they spend in language services with single language vendors, so $500,000, and 10 vendors around the world are going to lose $50,000 in revenue because of this shift. But that project didn't go away. That project went to another vendor that is going to use other SLVs, and that money is going to be still maybe a little less. Instead of $50,000 to 10 companies, it's going to be $40,000 to 10 companies. But the impact, the sensation is that there are 10 companies that are coming to the market and saying, oh my God, my revenue dropped by $50,000. And this is not necessarily an effect, a net effect in the whole industry. The net effect in the whole industry might be 10,000 times 10, $100,000, right? So there is complexity in this process. But Tucker, I don't know, I think it would be interesting for us to take a look at the curve itself, because there we go, you're good. You were prepared.
I was prepared. I just wanted to get a key insight in there before we tease the curve, keep people in their seats here. You mentioned that the language industry is an industry of growth, and the curve represents that. And I'm very, it goes up to 2035. I realize, especially if you're watching this on a phone, you might not be able to read some of the small print. Don't worry. We're going to talk through this with all of you guys. But before we get that, I want to keep on top of the chat here. And we have some comments in here. And I want to get to a question from Jonathan Downey. How should we apply the Goldman Sachs view that AI and Gen AI especially is being oversold and that its benefits are not in proportion to its hype? Is there a danger that the language industry could go too far in AI adoption?
Excellent question, Jonathan. And what they describe is what we have been observing. Right? In our conversations with clients, we hear that most of the pilots and the projects that they have implemented, and it's 2 years that we've been into this technology, have failed. I think at Lockworld in Dublin, Cisco presented that they had done 6 pilots with different providers, different models, and AI lagged behind machine translation with post-editing in all of them, in terms of cost and in terms of turnaround time. So the benefits weren't there yet. And they made it clear that it wasn't there yet. They haven't stopped trying. On the other side, they said that when it came to voice prompts, that they used to use voice actors and it was very complicated to make changes. They moved to synthetic voices, 2 voices for all the languages that they work with. And that had a very positive impact in terms of cost and turnaround time. So things that were taking 2 to 3 months to accomplish were being done in a 48-hour turnaround because it was very simple to adjust and use synthetic voices. So the impact is different according to the medium and the type of project. And this is just an example that was publicly presented by Cisco. But there are multiple stories like that. I shared a post on LinkedIn after I read an article in Tech Republic that 80%, and we're not talking about the language industry, we're talking about AI projects in all businesses and all industries, 80% of AI implementation projects fail, and they go over budget and they underdeliver. So the reality, and this is a pattern, right? The thing that drove us to look at this behavior and this pattern is the fact that, and one of the patterns that we have seen in the industry and I've identified that the first time I talked about this was about 12 years ago, is that we have a pattern of fear of change, of fear of whatever is new. And that fear is frequently not materialized. The thing that we're afraid of doesn't materialize in the ways that we think it's going to materialize. So we have this fear that this prophecy of the end of the industry and that we're all going to be replaced and become irrelevant never happens, because there is a new cycle, there is a new technology that comes around, there is a new need, there is a new platform, there is a new way to do the work that we were using to do. If I were working the way I started working in the language industry with a typewriter today, I would starve. Any translator that would work like that would starve. I have dictionaries here behind me as decoration. I haven't opened a dictionary in decades, literally. I search. I have it all on my hand and immediately available. So I like to compare what is happening to our profession as linguists is very similar to what has happened to mechanics or to photographers, right? A mechanic of the 1950s and 60s would be a dirty guy full of grease and oil. And today he's wearing a white uniform and using a computer, right? A photographer, which I've met many, many professional photographers. I know them. They have a good living. They have a profession because they are artists, or they're very, very good at the things that they do, and they're very, very professionalized photography segments and niches. All of us carry a camera right now in our hands wherever we go. The volume of photography that is available is immense. Why would you need photographers if anybody can take pictures? And it's not like that, right? The two coexist. The fact that everybody can do translation for free on Google Translate didn't kill our profession. In fact, it makes it stronger, it makes it bigger, it makes it better. And we're it's like a dentist, or I can make a ton of analysis. Yes.
And we're talking about, like, when you're talking about the industry, we're talking about the industry as a whole. As Laszlo aptly put it, not all ships are rising with the tide, right?
Yes.
So it's not, and he also said it's not distributed equally, which kind of brings me to a next question I got here in the chat. I promise I will get to the language services development curve. Karina mentions, agree with Renato Beninato regarding AI translation supports other industries, and we need to be aware of how AI affects those other industries, i.e. our potential clients. Thank you, Karina, for the comment. Spriram says, was about to ask the same question. I'd like to explore the current challenges that midsize and smaller language service providers are facing. I've heard from some LSPs that they're experiencing a decline in business lately, possibly due to the impact of AI. What do you think are the factors contributing to this trend? And I'll go to Laszlo for this one. Is running a small LSP the same game as it was 10 years ago? Historically, this industry has had a very low barrier to entry. Anyone can go out and start a translation company. Is that still the case? Are LSPs, smaller LSPs, facing the same struggles? What do they need to be aware of? And come off mute.
Yeah, you muted me.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry.
I think there's a little bit different dynamic, and it's not necessarily the size of the language service provider, but the service that they deliver, as well as the clients that they deliver to. So if a language service provider, say single language vendor or a regional language vendor is used to working with one of the large multilingual vendors, then definitely there is a high risk of seeing reduced demand and reduced revenue. And this calls for adjusting the sales mechanism and the branding and the messaging into finding direct clients more. Very simply because many clients are realizing, even the mid-sized clients, that it's easier to work with a vendor that is capable of delivering all the services or all the languages as one package, whereas the large language service providers, they're more likely to be looking at disintermediation and further automations that will kind of cut out the middleman, the single or regional language service provider. There's no surprise here. Actually, this has been the trend in the industry for a long time. AI actually, or technology investment, may speed this up a little bit. But again, AI and its impact is probably far less than we think. I'll give you another example, which I read about a week ago. I think it was the CEO of Amazon, Andy Jassy, who said, oh, they used Amazon Q, their generative AI-based assistant, internally to do a Java upgrade. It's software development, nothing to do with language, but it's a very important example because he said, oh, would they save 4,500 man years of work? That is unimaginably and vastly unbelievable. And immediately the discussions that were started on this was that, yeah, but he's comparing numbers to literally coders sitting down and doing the work manually. Essentially, we're talking about manual human translation, human-only translation, as it used to be 10, 20 years ago. And now they're doing it with tools, AI tools. Part of it is Gen AI. And so he's comparing not really the current best with the new best, but he's comparing the 10 or 20 years ago best state of the art to the current state of the art. And sure, Gen AI has some benefits in there, but let's just face two quick things. One of them, Amazon is of course popularizing its own tool. So of course they want to make it in the best light possible. And the second thing is many of these new AI tools, large language models specifically, they are highly geared for specific tasks. They are trained, for example, on computer code. They are made to do this. Nevertheless, no company is really firing software developers.
Yes, the consensus is that it enhances the work of the professional and it doesn't replace it. And the more, the better you are, the more it helps you. The better you understand the tool, the more useful it is to you. I did a very, very quick survey, literally in a group of 15 translators that are friends of mine, that are professional translators, very well-established people. And I just put a quick survey on a WhatsApp group. And I was impressed that of the 15, 13 didn't use AI regularly. Not intentionally. They probably use AI without even knowing. It's like they said, I use it to look for photos on my iPhone. But professionally, most of the people engaged in the language industry are not actively using generative AI, ChatGPT, Claude, Meta, Gemini, or whatever, to make their lives easier. They are using it as received wisdom, let's put it this way. They use it within their work environments. If they're using phrase or BureauWorks, and BureauWorks has an option to use generative AI in that moment, they're going to use it. But they're not going out of their way to find a way to use AI better for them. And surprisingly, several of the professional translators had never even touched or looked at it. They're just doing the work the way they do. So if you are just going through the motions, you're not innovating, you're not creating, you're not testing, you're not playing, you're not challenging. Because if you use AI, like I do, like Laszlo, like many of us do every day, you know that it doesn't work as well as you expect, that it's not reliable, that it hallucinates, that it's funny, that sometimes it creates you more work than you would have done just by doing it directly, manually, and so on. There are many situations. And an important thing, going back to the original question by Sriram, this perception of LSPs seeing a decrease, it's a structural problem that we have. Why? Because these are all companies that are in reactive mode. We see this every single day when we do consulting, when we get clients, LSPs who call us, how do we get out of this rut? It's always the same story. You are selling, sending emails, spraying and praying. You're not professionally acting as an expert, going to the market and winning new clients. Another consequence of the situation that we're in is that there are new businesses showing up every day. 15 years ago, companies like Facebook or LinkedIn or, I don't know, Salesforce started in 1999, and so it's 25 years old, multi-billion dollar company. They didn't exist. They didn't localize. They didn't do anything 15, 10 years ago. There are many companies in that scenario. As we move forward, there's going to be new companies that are going to be created and enabled by these new technologies like AI. And I want to tell a quick anecdote here, is that I used to say many years ago that if Google has Google Translate, why do they spend $500 million a year in localization? And same with Microsoft. They have the technology, why don't they use it? Well, they use it, but for localization, which is a complex activity, it's not up to par. And recently, I found out that OpenAI hired a localization manager, right? If OpenAI is so good at killing the localization industry, why do they need a localization manager? It's because it doesn't work for everything. It's not disruptive, as I said in the beginning. And this is, I think, is the big confusion that we make. And should we go back to the curve to talk a little bit about this pattern?
Let's get back into it,
yes,
right?
Please, because Renato, you put your thumb on the pulse, which is we expect that there are new developments coming in architecture, infrastructure, technology, ways of working, new ways of providing services, not language services, but generally services, new avenues of commerce, new interactions with content, with products. And those are all influencing the way content is consumed. And this is all influencing the way content needs to be localized, anywhere from multimodality to immersive technologies and things that we don't yet foresee. And I will let you, Renato, talk about it. But the key message here is that the industry's growth is not necessarily fueled from inside the industry, but is by and large influenced by external developments, fundamental innovations in economies and technology and business. And those that drive the creation of new businesses that maybe they are immature in the beginning, but soon enough they will grow to be new localization buyers whose needs need to be satisfied with or without AI.
So let's look at the curve here a little bit. This curve has essentially three main areas to look at. So we start with the curve in the middle. And you see there that you have 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, and 6G. This is, we call this the infrastructure inflection points, the changes that we have in infrastructure over time. At the bottom on the X axis, we have the years starting in 1980 and going all the way to 2035, which is 10 years from now. And on the Y axis, we have the size of the industry. So I started measuring the industry around 2009. And so I went back from 2009 when the industry was about $22-30 billion and tried to calculate how small it was going backwards to the 1980s. I started in the industry in 1981 and all the way to, and we should look at 2024, which is where we're now. And we have there in 2024, I think, Vision Pro as a milestone. Above the curve, you have milestones, dates that indicate things that happened in the industry over the years, either industry milestones, technology milestones, and devices, right? These devices like the personal computer, the Apple IIe, the iPad, the BlackBerry, the Motorola StarTAC, and so on. So these are moments that you can remember in your lifetime in the industry because were things that happened with us. And below the curve, there are S curves about certain technologies that have had an important impact in really changing the industry. We make a difference between incremental innovations and disruptive innovations. These S-curves are related to innovations that have been disruptive for our industry. First, the personal computer that allowed us to stop using carbon paper and whiteout and start editing our translations and delivering final translations in a better way, but still in the beginning using paper. And you see that these S-curves are not very steep. It means that it took several years, maybe 10 years, for the industry to look at a personal computer as something that everybody needed to have to be a participant in the industry. And the personal computer was an expensive. In the beginning of these S-curves, the technologies are expensive. So it takes time for them to become standard and be ingrained in the industry. The second small short S-curve that I have there is email. And I always talk about this. I think that email was very disruptive in our industry. And I think I put there Hotmail as the beginning of the curve when email became free. And email allowed translations to be done by native speakers in country. Before email, all the translations were done in your area code, in your state, and somewhere that it was accessible and affordable. Back in the 80s and 90s, it was very expensive to make a phone call to a different area code. Today, we don't think about that anymore. The third curve that we have there is translation memories. Translation memories started in I think 1996. I put there Trados 2.0 as a milestone. It's when it started, everybody started talking about that. It existed before, but it became mainstream around that period of time. And it took again more than 10 years for translation memories to become standard. In the beginning, translators fought against it. In the beginning, they felt that translation memories would kill the language industry. I personally used to say, why did we tell end clients about translation memories? It should have been kept a secret for the translation industry. We could have kept the margins for ourselves, right? And then we had a very, very short element with the translation management systems. And finally, we get in 2006 to the machine translation. It's when Google Translate became free. And then all of a sudden, you had Babelfish, you had AltaVista, you had a ton of other machine translation solutions available in the market. Personal instances, you could buy a CD to have an English-Japanese translation and so on, machine translation. But with Google, it became mainstream. And again, it was another period that we were afraid that the profession was going to end. There were people boycotting machine translation, feeding bad translations into Google so that it could be unreliable and so on. It was a bit of a Luddite reaction. But it grew, and then you have this big steep growth after 2016 when Google Neuro Machine Translation came around. Another big problem, another revolution in our industry, resistance, conferences talking about this, and we got used to it. And then LLMs show up, which is the period that we're now. The curve is much steeper. In just 2 years, we have seen this cycle of hyperbole and frustration happened very fast. And I believe that there's going to be other technologies and other S-curves that are going to start as we move forward. But the pattern is the same. It's just accelerating. But looking at the trends, I still believe that in the next 10 years, this industry is going to reach about $100 billion in revenue in a very different way than what we're doing it today.
And just to add to that, so you can observe on the curve, on the revenue curve, that right now in our age, there's a little halt in the growth. There's still growth, but it's slower than it was previously. And this primarily, again, it's thanks to multiple factors at the same time, one of them being the new technology, S-curve, large language models as such. One of the examples that exemplifies this is the CEO of Reddit, who said, "Oh, look at this. With OpenAI and ChatGPT, we can also translate. And we're going to make machine translation one of our big value drivers." Not realizing that actually machine translation as AI has already been available for a number of years. But at the same time, let's very quickly realize that when Reddit says they're going to use automated translation, machine translation, LLM translation, neural or not, doesn't matter, they're basically saying they're going to start translating content that otherwise would not have been translated. And we see this all over the world in all segments of business and economy. 99.99% of the content would not be translated simply because there are just not enough translators. There's not enough capacity to be able to deliver that multilingual messaging. Would that be user-generated content, technical documentation, whatever it is? Which takes us to the thing, one of the notions, which is translators, importantly, are scarce. But let's face it, they have already and always been scarce. There's always been more demand than translators could fulfill. And it's not just for translation, but it's also for additional language-related work. Would that be for text-to-speech? Would that be for transcription, for subtitling? Almost any of the services, they require more humans than are available to do the work. And at the same time, the industry is doing everything possible, not necessarily intentionally, but almost everything possible to deter new translators to enter the translation market, which is quite crazy if you think about it. But it's a reality that the industry has been facing for a number of years. And clearly, when we say that a senior or an experienced language talent for whatever service takes 5 years, 10 years to mature to peak performance, not just in terms of productivity, but also in quality as well, and in ways of working, in client communication, in technology savviness, that 5 to 10 years that needs to be survived by a newbie translator to become the next translator that makes a living, that's a really big step for newbie translators to enter the industry. It is a deterrent when we know that per word prices are essentially dropping, especially what LSPs are paying to their translators. And there is definitely a need for a new way of engaging with translators and helping new language talents to enter the industry and foster them into probably a higher or steeper learning curve, but to get them to a level of productivity and capability that was previously unmatched. And there are many companies who are doing this, even outside the industry. This is very well visible from different reports that it was the Federal Reserve Bank of New York who published a report who said within the state of New York, About 10% of the service companies in the past 6 months, they laid off people because of AI, but 5% hired. In the next 6 months, however, they expect that about 10% will lay off people because of AI, but 20% will hire, because they're realizing that the need for humans to intervene, to supervise, to do the end of the pipeline work, also to be able to train, to customize, to deploy the engines, and to orchestrate them together, they're very much in demand. And now there's going to be a big fight for different, at least AI savvy talent across different industries, including in the language industry. So we encourage every language service provider, as well as buyers, if they have internal language talent, to create the training materials, the training programs, and to foster their talent and to keep them, hold their hands, because there will be more needed than ever in the future.
Can we move to the next graph that we have? Because there is another element that we're not, there is a more than half of our report talks about the element of complexity, right? One of the reasons why we believe, we're talking about anecdotal data here until now, case here, a case there. But the reality is that it's very, very, very hard. And I'm not talking about translation only. I'm talking about any type of service to be easily and immediately replaced inside organizations, large enterprise organizations, because of the element of complexity. There is a school and some
people... Are we looking at figure three, Renato?
Yes, here? This is the one. All yes. Right. So what the message here is basically that large enterprise are very complex. They have multiple organizations. They buy in different ways. They have different levels of maturity, and they have different levels of execution. And these things keep changing all the time. Right. If you look at the organization we talked about, and I'm talking here about localization departments, but it could be development, product development, it could be marketing, it could be a bunch of other functions in the organization go through the same process. Is that at one point they're centralized, and then somebody decides that they have a reorganization in the company, and that centralized localization department becomes decentralized. Each country does whatever they want, or each department does whatever they want, each product does whatever they want. Then there is an element of a combined model where you both coexist. Parts of the company, like product, is centralized. Other parts, like marketing, are decentralized. And they work with 5, 6, 10, 15, as we have worked in a company that used to have 42 language vendors working for the company. And they worked to consolidate it, and they were able to bring it down to 4, but not yet to 1, right? There is an element of execution. Some companies outsource localization. Some companies single source. Some other companies insource, have it done in-house. SAP or Facebook are companies that have a lot of activities that are usually outsourced to LSPs that are done internally. So, and then there is the maturity. Some companies are very, very, they know very well what they're doing. And sometimes the maturity of the localization department changes inside the company depending on what product, what area they're developing. So when you look at this three variables that keep changing all the time, companies go through reorganizations, company goes through mergers and acquisitions, companies go through cost-cutting processes and initiatives. So they're constantly changing. There's never an end state where everything is stable and everything is regular. So because there is this constant change, it's very, 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 very hard to automate this type of complexity. You can automate parts of processes, but you're not going to automate and centralize everything in a company like Microsoft that is present in 142 countries, or a company like Volkswagen or Chrysler, companies that are global, that have multiple products, multiple divisions, multiple deliverables that need to be translated. These companies have HR departments that or training departments that cover whole regions, EMEA, just a European company present in the European Union, 28 countries, 26, 24 languages, official languages. It's very, very complex. So thinking that one type of software is going to come and replace all of this is oversimplifying the power of this technology. So what I have seen in my career is that, for example, a localization team survives 3 or 4 reorgs in the way that they are. After 3 or 4 reorgs, change of the CEO or change of headquarters or things like that, the market or changing of the leader of the retirement of the leader of the localization department will trigger a new RFP, will trigger new use of new technologies and things like that. So what we see every day in our practice here at NIMSI is that companies are always trying to figure out better ways to deliver their information, their content, their communication to their end clients in all the languages that they want. And they need to be looking at what is the new technology that they're going to invest in, what is the new product that they're going to use. And a last comment in this element of complexity, if you think that when a company, when an end client buys a TMS, let's use that example, or even a machine translation solution, they go through an evaluation period that lasts between 1 and 3 years. And then they go through an implementation period that lasts 1 to 3 years. And they're not going to change that platform for 10 or 15 years because it takes time. It's complex to do this type of work. So this idea that AI is going to drop from the sky ex machina and replace everything is a fantasy. It's not realistic. It will have a significant impact, but it's going to take time. And by the time the laggards are catching up to AI, there's going to be quantum translation or whatever new
the next scary technology.
The next scary acronym that comes out.
Right. Yeah, and just to add on to that, in the organization maturity execution model, to automate all of that kind of sounds like in your personal life, drop an Alexa in your living room. How many of your life problems does it solve? And this is not nitpicking on Amazon. Sorry to Amazon folks. Great products, by the way. They have their place.
How many new problems does it create?
That's exactly the point. That's the level of complexity. Anytime you make a change, a specific change in your system, and that's most often when we currently consult with our clients, one of the first questions that they ask is, how do others do it with technology? And their demand typically relates to what kind of technology should we implement so we do better? Yeah. And those are the wrong questions to ask up front, because technology alone does not solve the complexity problem. It only adds a new layer to it.
Fair enough. Well, gentlemen, we use the full hour, so much for not needing the full hour.
And so no growth suggestions, market shifts, opportunities emerging. They're all in the report.
Yeah, it's all in the report. My initial plan was to go through the key findings here. We've got 3 more key findings. I'll just speed run these really quick. So key finding number 2, check the full report for more context and discussion on these. The wave of AI tools such as large language models, LLM enhanced machine translation, speech recognition, synthetic voices, and voice cloning are quickly finding their way into localization workflows as features integrated within platforms of translation and content management systems, multimedia and e-learning tools, and more productivity enhancers. Key finding number 3. The same AI tools are also opening new markets for language technology and service providers via offerings such as automated subtitling, machine interpreting, and AI avatars as a viable alternative to no localization. Key finding number four, the technology-driven, sometimes assumed, productivity gains keep driving the decrease in per-unit costs, an opportunity as new enterprises and more content can now jump the lowering cost bar of language services. And lastly, key finding number five, human expertise remains vital in the localization process of mission-critical content, despite advancements in generative AI and other machine learning technologies. So those are the key findings. I don't know if we're going to have to schedule another podcast to go over those, or if I can just send you over to the report, nimsy.com. Read the full report. It's great. It was a nice surprise. I was not expecting this to come out while I was on vacation. So nice work, gentlemen. Any closing thoughts quickly before we close up today?
One last thing. We have to talk about pricing models, and this is another whole hour.
Yeah, you saw Karina's comment, didn't you? Sorry, Karina, I didn't get to that.
But... And that's another consequence of the changes that we're going to have. The disruption might be how we price our services. And spoiler alert, translation can be done for free.
Yep.
My last note is the industry needs to grapple with the notion of fit for purpose much better and needs to communicate it much better every direction, from translators to service providers, technology providers, and buyers as well. Currently, there's a lot of haze as to what technology providers promise to be able to do. And there is a very misty definition of what is it that needs to be done, and the two are currently not managed very well. And this is where, you know, NIMSY's consulting projects usually end up, to say, what is it, dear client, that you really need it?
Yep.
Piece of technology, are you sure? You see?
Exactly. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. I will take us out today, ladies and gentlemen. Chat, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us today, whether you're joining live or watching the recording afterwards as we're finishing up. If you haven't already done so, make sure to go to that NIMSY Insights LinkedIn page, follow us on LinkedIn, and you'll be one of the first people to know when we schedule new events like this. We've got another great podcast coming up next Thursday, so you can go sign up for that right now. Also, don't forget to go check out NIMSY.com. We have the Language Industry Curve, we have the NIMSY 100, we have the Interpreting Index. The amazing Yulia Kokova is just updating the Language Technology Atlas constantly over there. So many great resources available for you, for NIMSY partners, and also free for the entire industry. So with that, I'd like to thank my guests, Renato and Laszlo. I'd like to thank you, the audience, and I'd like to thank all of the NIMSY team members doing all the hard work so that I get to host these fun events. And we will talk to you next time. Cheers.